Admiral Bobby Ray Inman is a retired United States Navy admiral who held several influential positions within the United States intelligence community. This included becoming the Director of Naval Intelligence, the Director of the NSA, the Director of the National Underwater Reconnaissance Office, Deputy Director of the CIA, and Vice Director of the DIA. In 1981, Admiral Inman was operating as both the Director of the NSA and the Deputy Director of the CIA simultaneously. Amongst his other positions, he's been a chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, a director on the Board for Science Applications International Corporation, and has since made a success investing in the technology sector. He is a man who has spent the majority of his career at the absolute top of the intelligence community hierarchy, and it was a privilege to have an opportunity to speak with him and to hear his ideas on a whole multitude of issues. And so without further delay, here is my conversation with Admiral Bobby Ray Inman. Speaking of innovation and emerging technologies, this is definitely something I wanted to bring up with you while I have time. I know you keep yourself well informed on current events, so I imagine that you are aware of the fact that since 2017, there's been a fundamental shift in how quite a controversial issue is being addressed, and that's the issue of UFOs by the United States government. We've seen a gradual progression towards destigmatization and the dissemination of soft intelligence from within the Pentagon, within the Office of Naval Intelligence and the DOD on the subject of UFOs, or what they now call UAPs. And this, of course, when I found out about it, captured my interest. I've since had the opportunity to interview Luis Elizondo, the former director of the Pentagon's now publicly acknowledged UFO program that was revealed by the New York Times. I've spoken with the former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, Christopher Mellon, who said himself that the question is no longer if UFOs exist, the question is why are they here and who are they? So, like I said, it's a subject that's captured the interest of Congress, the mainstream media, and the wider public for a few years now. And people want to know what's going on. And I suppose, given your previous positions within the intelligence community, I would be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to ask you about this and see what you could tell us about this and if you've had any exposure to this issue.
In my years active service, I became intrigued by the whole issue of UFOs. As I dug into it, I found there were plausible explanations for virtually everything that we had observed. I was asked to build a program much like this one, where they showed video at all and asked what it was. Four objects over Phoenix that disappeared. That was pretty easy. Four South Dakota National Guard airplanes down exercising on afterburners that executed the turn. The others were, again, if you dug in, you could think Roswell, New Mexico. Trying to find a way to get air samples of Soviet nuclear tests. That was before the U-2. So the idea of take high-altitude balloons, put a lot of sensors on them, launch them in Canada, let the jet stream carry them through the area, and then recover them back over Alaska. And a test at White Hands to see, White Sands, to see if they would work. First one, it crashed in Roswell, New Mexico. And for a couple of days, not much reaction. Suddenly, panic that the Russians were going to find, the Soviets were going to find out what we're up to. So scoop it all up and take it to Site 51 in Nevada. And thus, great UFO boom there. There was one of the videos down near the White Sands area, along the Texas-Mexico border, that I simply speculated, said, if I didn't know better, I would have thought you actually captured an image of a stealth missile being tested in the process. And I got a call from the Air Force asking me not to speculate on test sites. Came to the private sector, 83. In 88, I was asked to join the board of, as a trustee of Caltech, primarily because Caltech managed the Jet Propulsion Lab for NASA. And didn't everybody who really knew Washington. So I've been on that board now 32 years. Oversight of Jet Propulsion Laboratory, all the unmanned space explorations, looking for any evidence of sign of life. I have a high level of confidence that within our galaxy, there is no other living life. We continue to wonder, well, what about out in the other galaxies? What will the James Webb telescope let us see? Where do you want to go after Mars? Do you want to go interstellar? What's the biggest challenge of trying to do that? Propulsion. Even with our state-of-the-art technologies broadly, we have to make some major breakthroughs to have any chance of doing interstellar. Now, is it possible that there are other civilizations out on other planets that are advanced beyond us and have solved the propulsion problems? I remain a great skeptic in the process. So I come back trying to understand what are the phenomena that have been observed that have caused the concerns. Inman's wild speculation is that those are long-range drones being used by potential adversaries to surveil ongoing activity in the U.S. and all, to collect information in the process and to take it back. Is it feasible to send drones halfway around the world to do images? The answer is yes.
Right, but
and
it's
we're
the,
not
it's,
the only country it's that the, has that confidence.
It's the performance capabilities and the flight characteristics that have been described, I think. I mean, the recent ones that have been coming up through the US government, like the now famous Tic Tac incident, which was it had no flight surfaces, no wings, no exhaust, no air plumes, no sort of signatures to it, and it was making erratic movements in ways that couldn't really be described by our physics.
Go back and compare that those evaluations to the ones that were related to the over Phoenix, along the border, all the rest, phenomena we did not understand, and the observations did not automatically tell you what the answer could be. So there are clearly things here to try to understand and explore, and particularly if we're being subjected to surveillance within this planet. For what purpose in the process? But for my JPL, I remain highly confident that there are no other elements within our galaxy that could be providing those. And I'm very skeptical of interstellar unless it's something out there that's far advanced beyond where the U.S. is technology. I think if it existed, we would have seen other evidence of it by this time. The James Webb will let us know a lot more about this over the next 2 or 3 years.
Well, maybe you can just help me clarify something, because when I was doing some background research on you, I came across a fascinating little segment from a documentary. It was a segment of an interview that you had in 1989 with a man called Bob Exler. Do you remember speaking to a man called Bob Exler?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Yeah, and during this conversation, he asked you whether you believed that the recovered vehicles would ever be made available for technical research outside of the military circles. And your response to this was, 10 years ago, I would have said no, but whether time has evolved and they're beginning to become more open on it, it's a possibility. So obviously, correct me if I'm wrong, but it just seems like you're suggesting here that you're aware of retrieved UFOs being studied by the military.
No, the answer was no. I would not. We're not. Absolutely, we're no retrieved UFOs. I have high confidence.
A close confidant of George Bush and a man well acquainted with Area 51 was Admiral Bob Inman. His credentials are impeccable. He was director of both Naval Intelligence and the National Security Agency, as well as deputy director of the Defense Intelligence Agency and the CIA. In a telephone conversation with Bob Exler in 1989, he referred to recovered vehicles becoming available for research.
Do you anticipate that any of the recovered vehicles would ever be become available for technological research outside of the military circles?
Again, I honestly don't know. 10 years ago, the answer would have been no.
Yeah.
Whether as time has evolved, they're beginning to become more open on it, is a possibility.
It seems like you're suggesting here that you're aware of retrieved UFOs being studied by the military.
No, the answer was no. I would not. We're not. Absolutely, we're no retrieved UFOs. I have high confidence. That was not the case. Hardware that ended up out of Site 51 was our own planned collection platforms that we didn't want Soviets to know about. Happily, you two came along. We no longer needed to depend on balloons high altitude being floated by the jet stream to collect critical information we needed. What we didn't realize at stage that over the U-2 flew at over 70,000 feet, altitude, it still could be brought down by long-range surface air missile, as Gary Francis Powers painfully discovered on his flight from Pakistan. So my speculation was simply everything. Not that there were people already done, but quite in the future. That's why remember 89 is when I began my JPL time and my much deeper engagement in unmanned research of other planets in the system. Voyager, which has now already gone out into interstellar space, the two Voyager satellites. The very thorough look at Saturn and Jupiter and others. So I'm much more confident now than I would have been in 89 that there are not other entities within our galaxy that could provide extraterrestrial research. I've been cautious here until we really understand interstellar and can look out and have a high level of confidence that there's not another even more advanced society out in other galaxies. Can we just absolutely say that it exists? So the big challenge now is to go back and explore all of the phenomena that would explain what the pilots have seen in the more recent episodes. They're more complex. The ones I dealt with earlier, the four jets over Phoenix et al., those were pretty simple to solve.
Well, that's it. I mean, we now have, they had the Aegis radar tracking this. It was on infrared through the Atflir pods on the F-18 strike fighters. And, you know, there's a lot of different data that's suggesting that these are far more anomalous than simply a mischaracterized mosaic explanation.
Jay, let me remind you that you can observe things on radar.
Yeah.
and be absolutely inaccurate. Go back to the Gulf of Tonkin. They got us into the Vietnam War. On the August the 2nd, there were PT boats. On August the 4th, there were high waves and reflection off the top of those waves that led to an interpretation that there was a second PT boat attack. So we launched into the Gulf War, to the Vietnam War. And we later found out there were no PT boats out that second day. It was simply radar reflections of tops and waves and people in a uncertain panic condition presumed them to be PT boats. We knew later from captured North Vietnamese PT boats. They were there on the 4th, 2nd. They were not there on the 4th. So just another example that what you think you see on radar can turn out to be something entirely new.
Mm. Did you ever cross paths with Ben Rich, the former director of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, during your career?
No, I did not.
Yeah, because he made some interesting statements over the years. One of them, interestingly enough, was at a 1993 alumni speech at UCLA, where he was quoted to have said the following: "We already have the means to travel among the stars, but these technologies are locked up in black projects, and it would take an act of God to ever get them out to benefit humanity. Anything you can imagine, we already know how to do." And that's coming from a director of the Skunk Works.
Yeah. And what he's referring back to in those days with the SR-71.
Well, really? He said traveling among the stars.
Already flying at 2.5 times the speed of sound. While we were saying that building a supersonic aircraft would be too difficult to undertake, and we couldn't do that. So that was the technology that was classified in the black program. That's in the late 80s, in the early 90s. Actually, in the late 70s, on into the 80s. I come back to earlier in this conversation, focusing where should JPL go after Mars. We're going to be looking at Jupiter again and the moons around it. But I believe the focus ought to be on interstellar, if we really want to be absolutely certain that there are not other planets out in other galaxies that support life as we find it here on Earth. And that's going to require major breakthroughs in propulsion to get us there. Now, the SR-71 was a major breakthrough in propulsion to get us 2.5 times the speed of sound. It's going to take something a lot beyond that. Is it nuclear? I have a clue at this point. Ion, maybe. But all I know is there have got to be breakthroughs in propulsion to get us out of our galaxy and into others. While we're still alive, you don't want to send off something that you're not going to know for 20 years what it observed, what it got. Our impotence, maybe we will end up doing that because we can't do the propulsion to get out there faster. But the urge is going to be accelerate technology to be able to go explore other galaxies.